Welcome back to The High Functioning Disaster, the show where we stop pretending life is tidy and talk about what it actually takes to show up through the mess. This week, we're diving into my interview with Hillary Momberger Powers, who was one of the original voices of Sally Brown in the beloved Peanuts cartoons. Behind that spotlight, she was a little girl carrying adult-sized expectations and a home marked by addiction, volatility, and the pressure to perform. Hillary has been in recovery since 1983. She studied with John Bradshaw, managed the first sober living house for women alcoholics in the U.S., and has spent four decades mentoring people out of cycles of pain and into freedom. Her signature message? No longer leading with your wound. In this first part, Hillary shares the original carving of her trauma story, the roles we adopt to survive, people-pleasing, hyper-self-reliance, defiance, and the simple stabilizers that helped her build safety from the inside out. It's raw, wise, and full of practical hope. Let's get into it. Hillary, I'm so thrilled to have you to have you here today. And when you and I first connected on Podmatch, I have loved getting to know you and learning about your story. For listeners who may be meeting you for the first time, how do you describe the journey from Sally Brown to recovery mentor?
Is that a question? Or that's a statement. You can end that question. Like, how do you?
Yeah. How do you describe the journey from Sally Brown to recovery?
Well, you know, a journey is never a straight line. Sometimes there's ebb and flows up and down, and it's been quite a ride, you know. It's funny because someone had asked me the last couple of days, wow, how did you just get, how'd you switch up? It was a woman. She asked me today and I said, well, you know, it's not like I made a decision to go, oh, I'm going to be Sally and then I'm going to be this. When I was a kid, if your listeners don't know, I was one of the original voices for Sally and Charlie Brown Peanuts. Which sounds like it was super fun and exciting, but when you're 5 and 6 years old and you just want to be a kid, the last thing you want to do is be hauled out of school, taken down to a place called Hollywood, which you could really not care about, and then have to perform. And all I really wanted to be was a kid. So, you know, it's a cartoon character. That's what I became. And it kind of carried me into my younger years, into my teen years, and even into my adult, of being this face of somebody I think you want to know. And I spent a long time, you know, trying to be the girl that you want, the friend that you want, the this that you want. And that goes with, you know, the theme of your show is trying to be everything, the highly functional. I can be, I'm Captain Save-A-Ho all the way to I'm whatever, you know, I can take care of it. I can fix it. I got this. I'm okay. You know, and the problem is I didn't have anything. I was grappling to kind of figure out who I was in the midst of playing somebody else. And it was pretty exhausting. So I grew up in this family with, my mother was a Jackie Gleason girl. And if you don't know what that is, in the TV show of Jackie at Gleason, he would, in the beginning, there would be a beautiful woman. My mother was really pretty. And she would say, and here's Jackie. And that was her claim to fame. And that was her being this great actress. And then it was in the times where it wasn't appropriate for a woman to be an actor. You know, a good Catholic girl needs to be a mother. So she decides to pick my father. He went to West Point. My mother went to Barnard. good looking, smart, and I used to say they did three things: drink, fight, and you know what, seven children later. And so, you know, she had all these kids. She kind of abandoned her acting career and became a mother. Because when you're pregnant, everyone says, oh my God, you're so beautiful. You're so pretty. Look at all your kids. Look at, they dress perfectly. So my mother, being the unsatisfiable ego alcoholic, I called her, she would try to make everybody look really great on the outside. Yet on the inside, meaning our home life, our personal life, was an absolute shambles. There was fighting, there was drinking, there was violence, there was sexual abuse, there was just every day, you just didn't know what you're going to wake up to. You know, we used to call her Mommy Dearest. Her AK name, her name, her joking name was Satan. You know, we were Catholic kids, and that was like the worst thing to call somebody. And, you know, because we didn't know what we were up against with my mom. I didn't know if she was going to be in a good mood or what I needed to do to appease her unsatisfiable ego, which was due to her alcoholism. And so as a kid, my mother took us down to Hollywood. I got my first job, my first audition. I met Charles Schulz and Bill Melendez, and bam, it was a career that day from on. And like I said, I was whisked out of school. I was displaced. I felt different. You know, nowadays, kids all want to be famous. They want to be Insta-famous, you know, TikTok, anything, pick me, look at me, look at me. But I didn't want that. It was at a time when we had three or four TV stations. I was doing commercials, so it was on your television a couple times a week. And there was shame attached to it because I didn't fit this happy, joyous little girl. Yet in my house, it was a house of horrors. And, you know, it was screaming and yelling and being pulled out of the bed by your hair. And it just, you know, it was just a lot of mayhem. It was a dysfunctional home, to say the least. But, you know, today that's like a, you know, a normal word. It's like narcissist. It's like everybody's a narcissist. You might be right, but everybody is, you know. Back in the day, it was taboo to come from a crazy, dysfunctional home. But we look good on the outside. So here I built this character, very, very young. The character I built, and I call that my trauma character, is I'm always scared. I think I'm going to be in trouble. I got to be perfect. I got to smile acute and at all costs don't give my personality or any emotions because that's not profitable, as my mother used to say. And so I had to build this character based around Ready for Freddy. But you'll never know it because I put a mask on. I put a new character on. And I brought that mask way into my teens and my 20s until finally I nearly killed myself because I didn't know who I was. So when you grow up in trauma, and I talk a lot about that because my theme is, you know, no longer leading with your wound. When you grow up in this battlefield, I call the battlefield of home, and you don't know what's going on, you go into a little terror. So it's that live or die, good or bad, happy, sad, up, down, black, white, blue, red. So we're dualities is swinging back and forth. And so I'm in survival mode, and that's where trauma is. It's like, am I going to die today? What do I got to say? Who do I have to please? I would go to school and I would play a part. Who do I have to, what did I tell so-and-so? Where am I going here? You're fuzzy now a little bit, your picture. And so I would go through this whole thing. And the weirdest part is, you know, I didn't know I was just in a reactive state constantly. You know, and so when you're in that traumatic reactive state, which a lot of us are today in our climate, our emotional climate in the world, I'm either a loner, which means I don't need anybody. It's okay. I hide out my room, which a lot of kids do. They sit in front of their computer. They watch TV. They go away. They read books and they just hibernate. or they become the people pleaser, which is me. What can I do? Oh my God, I can do everything. I can jump backwards. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. No, I'm not tired. It's okay. Are you hungry? No, 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 no. It's okay. I don't want you to not like me. So I'm this huge people pleaser. Or you become the controller, which I later graduated into. So, and that one is everything has to be perfect. The house has to be perfect. You have to be okay. Don't say the wrong thing. And if something is said wrong, it's like, you know, we react, we yell, we scream. And that was where my mother was at. She was constantly in that control, that terror, that she was like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. We were all afraid of being eaten by this woman. So we would go into ways. So I would perform to make her okay. I would hide her alcohol. I'd pour it out. I would tell her I loved her. I would anything to make mommy okay. So I can stabilize. And I brought that character building that I did into my adult years, meaning I'll be okay if you love me. I'll be okay if you say the right thing. I'll be okay if I get that job, I make that money, I get that car, I find that man, I get that, I get, because I'm so much wanting my outsides to make my insides feel sound. So I grew up in this crazy family where, you know, I'm acting, I'm thinking, is this enough? And one day my mother just said, you know, you want your brothers and sisters to starve, you better get up the game. And I'm like 8 going, okay, what do I do? So I grew up learning how to figure it out. You got to, when you're in a trauma house, you got to figure it out. So at about 13 and 14, mom and dad got, no, actually 12, 11 and 12, mom and dad broke up. My mother finds a guy who was a drug dealer at the time. It was in the 70s. And he used to say he was a chemist. And so he would cook speed. And he said, well, I turn it into this stuff. And then, you know, I'm probably going to win. He used to tell me he was going to win a Nobel Prize. I was like, for that? I didn't even know what it was. I was like, wow, he's going to win a Nobel Prize. That's what he called it, a Nobel Prize, right? I was like, oh, okay. So here I was with dad, who is West Point, strict, but never home. And then we meet my mother's new obsession, which is this drug dealer. And all of a sudden, the rules are gone. My mother's happy all the time. And I'm like, oh my God, she's crazy. And I find out that all this money I had made, because I had done Doll Voices, Baby Beans, Hi Dottie, Tiny Tears, for Mattel, and was all spent. She had given all this money to the chemist. And good girl turns bad. Now the pleaser becomes the loner. Now my mother starts saying Hillary and her famous disappearing acts. Where's Hillary? She's gone again. And I learn 12 and 13, the art of running away from home. I live in California. So it's like, you know, God, it's like pot everywhere and, you know, rose colored glasses. And it's during the 70s. It's kind of hippie time, Led Zeppelin. And, you know, they're returning now. But, you know, Pink Floyd. And you're just like, I find drugs and alcohol. And, you know, I talk about when a lot of people, when they say they found the drugs and alcohol, it was like the best thing for them. And it broke them. I was already so broken. So when I found drugs and alcohol, it wasn't that ease and comfort of, oh, I feel great. It was more of, oh, I don't feel anymore. Like I was so stressed growing up. I had blisters on my fingers. I bit my fingernails to the quick. And, you know, I was picking my face, scratching. I was a cutter. It was just, I hated everything about me because I never felt as if I measured up to this narcissist, high. Her bar was so high, nothing could fix it. Nothing could jump that high. And I brought that into every single relationship. So as soon as I cared for you, you're never enough or I'm not enough. I got to get out of here. So I started running and running away from home. And finally, you know, it became a violent weekend and I had, you know, my mother hit me. I hit her back and I get arrested for assault and battery. And I go to juvenile hall going on 15. And from there, I basically became girls gone wild. I left the juvenile hall after a few weeks. 6 weeks, my mother decided to drop charges and I said, I'm never going home again. And I moved into a foster home and I lived in a foster home and there was sexual abuse going on. And it was almost normal for me because there was sexual abuse going on in my house. And I thought, well, I guess this is just my life. And, you know, I was raised Catholic, whatever that means in this quiet house of horrors, but I was raised Catholic. And I used to say, if I have to choose my mom and dad's God, I don't want a God in my life. And that was kind of how I proceeded. I thought I was in purgatory. I thought I had earned this horrible world and I thought I had done something wrong. So I was constantly punishing me for not being what I thought I was supposed to be. And that's another part of a character that I brought into my adult. And I don't even know I'm bringing this into. So every single choice that I make from my childhood all until I start this road of healing is I'm leading with my wound. I think I'm not enough. So everything I choose reflects how I think about myself. So here I say, I want a great job, but deep down in my basement is my trauma. My trauma says, you're not enough. You're a failure. You will never get anywhere. You're not pretty enough. You're not smart enough. The I'm not enough is the underlining voice that's screaming so loud that I can't even hear what it's saying. And I'm picking everything that resembles and looks like and feels like and acts like the true core beliefs that I have grown as a kid. I don't even know this. People are like, how are you doing? I'm great. How's it going? Great. I'm just getting another degree and I'm going to get another car and another boyfriend or husband or job or, you know, I just more lipstick or makeup or whatever your du jour is. Doesn't matter because I keep covering up this pain that keeps trying to ooze out. You know, I become bulimic. I eat food. I throw it up because I'm just raging. Because I can't keep anything. I'll never be pretty enough. I'll never be skinny enough. Like the enough so pushing everything I do. I don't want to hurt myself, but I don't know that I have an option or a choice or I deserve anything more. So I go into my teens and my 20s and just, it's just, it goes on and on and on. It's just like every bad choice. By the time I was 21, I had been raped 3 times. I don't tell anybody about it because it's probably my fault. And sorry about that. And so I literally, you know, everything is about, you know, I'm just not enough. That's it. So every choice reflects how I feel about myself. You're a loser. You're an idiot. So I drop out. I leave this foster home because there's sexual abuse going on and I don't want to be the next in line. And I do what any 15, 16-year-old does. I run away from home. I find a place to live in North Long Beach, Compton, in a warehouse with the boyfriend who's the one. I'm 16. I want him to be the one because I'm looking for someone to rescue me. I'm a victim of me. But I can't, I don't even know it because I can't see myself. I just think it's because of you and you, my parents. And so I was suffering from victimese for a very long time. I really believed that if it wasn't for what I grew up in, and I had an excuse for everything because I didn't think I was ever going to change. So I had to patent that answer down. If I had to change, you would require me to do something different, and I don't know different. So I'm just going to stick with my narrative. It's your fault. It's their fault. It's my fault. So I end up by the time I'm, 21 years old, I had moved probably 50 times. I lived in a warehouse. I sold pots and pans on the side of the highway. I sold drugs. I went to 9 high schools, or 7 high schools. I never got out of 9th grade because I used to say, I just don't know which one to graduate from, so I'll leave, always find something funny because, in the humor, there's no pain because I make you laugh and then I feel better. So I don't feel. So I know how to conduct the whole. There's my control comes in. So I start controlling with my sense of humor. I control with my body. I control with my sex. I control with my, my manipulation, my lies. Because I'm just trying to survive. I'm in trauma constantly. Is today the day? Is it you? Can I trust you? Should I? So I end up, by the time I'm 21 years old, I overdose, I go into a grandma's seizure because now I find drugs and alcohol, I told you, and I just want out. I don't think I'm going to make it to 20. I don't care. I just feel like I've failed everybody. And I go into grandma's seizure and I was on a fire escape in Venice Beach and I said, if there's a God, please help me. And they stopped. And I would love to say the sky parted and I found God and we lived happily ever after. Oh, no. Because my ego rebuilt itself. I thought, whoa, that was good. I just won't do that much next time, But I ended up, but for the grace of God, and I call them lots of little angels, I ran into somebody who said, come to an AA meeting with me. And at 21 years old, what I heard him say is, I love you, Hillary. Date me. Follow me to an AA meeting. Selective hearing. He didn't say that. He said, you look terrible. Come to a meeting with me. You almost died. And thank God, my attraction to thinking he's my Captain Save-A-Ho got me in the doors. And it was my first introduction to, I call, the pyramid of getting out of your trauma. Stabilizing. And what I mean by that is, when everything is going like we have a lot of stuff happening in our world and we're just like, we keep trying to figure it out. Is that what happened? Is that why? Well, that keeps us still on this pendulum going back and forth and back and forth. And the moment we sit back and say, okay, how do I make me calm down instead of trying to get the world to calm down. Because if I figure it out, I think it'll calm me down. So when I got it, my first got into the program, it was simple. And it was the hardest thing for me to do was pause. And that's like scary to somebody who's always running. Moving targets don't get hit. I was born with Nikes. I'd make jokes about it. And then I'd have to pause. So when you're in trauma, the simplest things to do are stabilize. Hungry? Did you eat today? Have you drank enough water? It's hungry, angry, lonely. Not hungry, angry, lonely, tired. It's seeing, tasting, touching, feeling. Hearing. My 5 senses need to calm down. So little things like get a little extra sleep, it starts to stabilize me. And when I started to stabilize, I got the feeling that I had not had in probably my whole life. I started to feel safe. When I started to show up and when people said, hey, Hillary, how you doing? I saw you last week. There's an ease and comfort that all I wanted from the drinking, I wanted that from the guys, from the money, from the this. I just want to feel that exhale. So the seeing, I started seeing different things. I was no longer seeing my nightmare over and over and over. Tasting, I started drinking water. I started eating better. I started clothing myself differently. Like I'd walk out of the house with no clothes on and say, why do they rape me? It was so messed up. My mind was so fractured. not broken, but fractured. When I'm broken, it's changed forever, but my mind was fractured. I was so hurt inside from what I believed I should have had and I didn't get. But today, I look at what I got, and it's like the best gifts I've ever had. I wouldn't change one day or one iota. So I ended up, you know, stabilizing the seeing, the tasting, the touching, the feeling, and hearing. I started permitting myself to be around different types of people. So I started hearing things that were nurturing to me, kinder people, people saying, hello, how are you? You know, little stuff like that instead of, oh God, here she is again, get out. You know, I changed my music, like everything about my life slowly, slowly, slowly shifted. And then there was a sense of stability. When I feel stable, I feel safe. There's my foundation. So it's like when a little kid's like, oh, honey, you're tired. You need a little nap. They're screaming, yelling, having a meltdown on, you know, aisle 5 at Walmart. And it's like hearing, tasting, touching, hearing, smelling. What are their senses like? Are they tired? Have they drank water? You know, do they need something to eat? Maybe they need to get away from the sounds are too crazy and loud in Walmart. Like these little simplicity things. But what we want to do is we want to change our environment to make our insides feel okay. And that's not the world's responsibility. My responsibility is to pause, assess, and like, oh, I'm just tired today. I need a nap. Like a nap. Like that's why we got naps when we were in kindergarten. So we would stabilize and feel safe. And then we were what? When we're stabilized, we feel safe. We have a feeling of belonging. And I wanted to belong so bad as a kid. That's why I was a performer. I wanted you all to like me. I would tell you whatever you wanted to hear. I would act and be and say and think just so you liked me. And I saw that that sense of belonging, I started surrounding myself with people of my likeness. Like, how simple. Like, if you're having struggles today, what do you like to do? Do you like to go see movies? Go find some people to go to the movies. Do you like to go for walks? Do you like to sit on the grass? Do you like to go for runs? These simple things that appease your senses helps you feel like you belong. Like, join a group. Join a book club. Join a hiking club. You know, go if there's someone at the lake who a bunch of people swim on Sundays, go for it. So you can feel that it's a stabilization. So there's safety. Then we have the other one, which is you feel a sense of belonging. And when I belong, my self-esteem grows. All of a sudden, I'm like, wow, they said hi to me. Oh, I'll show up. I can do that for you. Can I pick you up? Can I? All of a sudden, my esteem grows. I start liking myself a little more. I start liking you. Because if I don't like me, I am not going to like you. Because it's an inside job. And I see all these people who are so angry at other people. And I think, oh, poor babe. They don't like themselves right now. Have they? And I think if they stabilize themselves and they got into some environment where other people were trying to have that relax and let go, they too would feel that sense of ease and comfort that we go outside of ourselves to get from the guys and the girls and the money and the shopping and the whatever your du jour is, the porn, I don't care what it is. We all try whatever to get that hit. Give me a dopamine hit. And so you all of a sudden you have the sense of feeling like you're worth something. Then you can be productive. Then you think, man, I'm going to get a job. I want to get a job. That's a great idea. So we no longer are now performing to make you think we're okay. We're doing it because we start feeling good about ourselves. I'm no longer in the survival mode. I'm not in any self-protection, my self-abandonment. I'm not doing that anymore. All of a sudden, I start calming my tornado down, my internal tornado. And once I start healing, you know, I say then, I no longer am speaking from my wound. I speak from my scar. Scar now is I'm incredibly resilient. Like, thank God these things have happened. Like, when something happens, I go, oh, it'll be all right. Because I've been through it before. Because I know that if I can go through what I've gone through, I can go through anything. And then I started, once I start feeling good about myself and I start liking Hillary a little bit more, then I started saying, well, maybe there is a God. Because, see, I can't recognize good or God if I don't recognize good or God in me. So I started seeing that maybe, you know, maybe God is here. I, like, I didn't die. And, you know, I kept thinking, why did I grow up in this family? And then one day I learned that some of the worst things that happened to me have been the most greatest gifts. It has brought me unity. I've been allowed to, I speak freely of what I've been through. I am not what I've done. They're part of my history that have created this really, really powerful inside, because I've tapped into my power, I call God, resilient, just a huge heart woman, Hillary. Not a fat, ugly piece of, you know, whatever, not enough, never gonna, all those are lies. Those were principles, truths I were living by, that I adopted from what I thought was real. I perceived bad things happening as a reflection of my worth. And I, you know, I started looking around because now I'm not so self-centered, because now I'm now liking myself so I can see you. And then I start gaining friends and I start believing I can get a job and I start praying to this source I don't even know exists. And I say, God, please help me, help me. I don't know if you're there. If you're there, can you give me? And I don't ask for things because God ain't no Santa Claus. But I can say, can you give me courage and strength to get through today? Because I don't know if I can make it. And bam, all of a sudden I see a butterfly. What does that have to do with courage and strength? You know, when you have a little kid and they hit their elbow and it starts screaming, what do? Look at the puppy. I have them turn the other cheek. Turn your attention somewhere else. And so I've had a lot of great moments of getting outside of focusing on how bad my life is to saying, how are you? I've turned the other cheek. I've focused on something else. And then all of a sudden, I become very productive in my life. And when I feel productive, I'm stabilized. I'm in belonging. I have self-esteem. I'm productive. And now I can be of service and I can help another human being. That's God. That's God in solidified. If I can get out of myself and who cares about me and go, how are you? And shut up and listen. I'm tapped into a source other than Hillary. And I call that God. And it's been powerful. I've, you know, I went through this whole process. I gave myself an opportunity. You know, I was 21 years old and I didn't have an education. And I got a woman who said, go back to high school. I went and got my high school diploma. I went to nursing school. I went to art school. I ended up going back into film and I didn't want to be an actor because I had been seduced so much physically that I wanted to use my brain, because somewhere along the line, by me helping other people and thinking about someone else, I got this notion that I might be smart. So I went back to UCLA and I went to film school and I became a script supervisor and I've had an incredible career. I've made a lot of really, really, really stupid decisions in my personal lives. You know, when you got really close to me, I got super scared and I'm out of here. I go to loner. I'm done. I'm gone. And over the years, I've learned to trust. I've learned to look at other people and take examples. You know, I've asked this power I don't even know, I call God, to please help me just have a relationship with myself and be able to share that with someone else. And today I have incredible friendships. You know, I am as loyal as they come because I'm loyal to me. My wound is not my wound. It's the scar that's so durable and so taut and so strengthful. And that's my character. And, you know, I mean, I have my ups and downs where I said to my girlfriend, she said, you know, women are crazy and men are young, are young boys. And, you know, I'm going to have my moments. I'm going to be okay with it. And I laugh at myself and I say, uh-oh. See, I've learned to name that crazy side of me. I have Hillary and I have Helga. You know, it's when I'm in my black and white. And the gray zone is making friends with both of them. Like sometimes I'm Hillary. Sometimes I'm like, well, Helga here, she's back. And I got to make fun of that. I got to make play of every part of me. I am a concoction of all kinds of emotions. And that's okay. It's okay. I'm not perfect. I don't want to be perfect. You know, yeah. I'm sure
imperfection.
It's exhausting. And today I have so much more energy because I make mistakes and I don't go, you stupid idiot, you ass. I go, oopsie, I made a mistake.
You are human.
Yeah, I've learned how to be very loving and gentle with this poor little girl that was really hurt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I say things like, I'm going to make the decisions today. You don't have to, honey. We're going to make grown-up decisions, you know, and we're going to say no, and they're not nice. And if they're not nice to us, we're going to excuse ourselves. We don't have to make them like us. It's okay if they don't like you. Maybe they need to like somebody else. You know, they're not rejecting you. It's just, it is the way it is. It's like having those simple talks with myself have been very, very healing. So, you know, I'm very happy to say that my choices are not based on my yesterdays. Otherwise, I'd have my yesterdays today.
Right. So. Absolutely. That is a good way to put it. That wraps up part one of my conversation with Hillary Momberger Powers. I don't know about you, but I'm sitting with a lot after this one. The way she describes leading with your wound as elevator music that keeps looping underneath everything we do, or how she reframes being broken into being fractured and healed stronger. It's such a good reminder that stability doesn't come from fixing the world around us. It comes from tending to ourselves. Hunger, anger, lonely, tired, the basics that keep us grounded and safe. If this episode hit home, share it with a friend. And remember to follow or leave a quick review wherever you're listening. It really does help the show reach more people who are trying to show up through their own mess. In part two, Hillary opens up about what reinvention really looks like. Why it's not a midlife crisis, but a calling. We'll talk about shifting from I have to I get to, setting boundaries with warmth, what she calls pet the kitty, don't poke the snake, and learning to live from the scar instead of the wound. It's such a rich, hopeful continuation of her story. So make sure you're subscribed. Part two drops tomorrow. Oh, and one last thing. The content shared on the High Functioning Disaster is for informational and conversational purposes only and is not intended as professional, medical, or mental health advice. Everyone's situation is unique, and what we talk about here may not apply to your specific circumstances. Please do what's right for you and always consult with a qualified professional for medical, mental health, financial, or legal guidance. You take care of you, boo. See you next time.